Welcome to Everywhere and Nowhere, a Sheffield Wednesday podcast brought to you by The Star, with Joe Cran, Alex Miller, and your host, Chris Holt.
Now then, a very warm welcome to Everywhere and Nowhere. You might have noticed that I do not have the dulcet tones of Mr. Chris Holt, as the intro suggested. Chris is poorly. Middle age gets you, doesn't it? There's a few ailments that drop in there, especially in these cold winter months. So it's over to the kids to run the show. Alex Miller is myself. Joe Cran, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm proud to be called a kid at 34. I'll take that.
No, well, compared to Old Man River. Yeah.
It's great that he's just sat in the background having to watch this as well.
Yes, I'm expecting my P45 the second this recording is finished. Joe, another busy week of Sheffield Wednesdayism. Some fun, some certainly not fun. We'll get on to that a little later on. We've spoken to Danny Rowell and Barry Bannon today as part of Wednesday's pre-Coventry City FA Cup press engagement day. I think that's what they call it on the streets, isn't it? And a couple of lines out of there. It feels like transfers, and certainly in terms of incomings, things are moving a little bit slowly. Let's talk about the outgoings. He had a bit to say on Lee Gregory and Michael Smith in particular.
Yeah, it does feel a little bit, and obviously he's not going to speak massively openly about it, but it does kind of feel like Wednesday are waiting for a few dominoes to fall. With Gregory and Smith, he sort of suggested that, you know, they're able to leave if the right offer comes along. But if the right offer doesn't come, then he's more than happy to have them around. I think it was important to note that he said of all the players, not just the ones who were potentially maybe leaving. He said everyone's working really hard. He said there's no slouchers, there's no slackers in there. No one's sort of down in tools because they're not getting games. And I think that's probably something that's quite nice for people to hear. And he says he's been very honest with people, doesn't he? He said people know where they stand in this group. And I think that's probably something that the players appreciate as well.
In terms of the incomings, there is a nervousness as the emergency service raced past my flat. I don't know if you could hear that. There is a nervousness out there in terms of the business Wednesday are trying to get done. Danny Rowell has said throughout that he wants, you know, he reeled off a few positions. There's a number of players that he clearly wants in the door. Wednesday have got to win. They're a club that traditionally, as most Championship clubs do, sort of do their business towards the end of the window, or certainly finish their business towards the end of the window. We know of at least two deals that have got close and not come to fruition, and both of them would have been pretty attractive signings. So there's the frustration that comes with that. What's your view on the general frustration around the place, and how much can you sympathise with it, I guess?
I get it completely. I think there was a general feeling, I think, that because Wednesday were very obviously in trouble, that they were going to burst out of the blocks, go and sign 5-6 players. And Danny spoke in the early doors about how he wanted to get things moving fast. And I think they were almost they worked to their own detriment by getting Ike Ugbo and James Beadlin so quickly that you almost create a rod for your own back there, because now everyone's going, well, where is everybody else? Whereas if we were, you know, if they'd done that maybe a week in, 2 weeks in, the mood might have been a little bit different. But I understand the frustrations. I think the fact that and probably we have to take some fault in this as well, the fact that deals have fallen through, if people didn't know that they'd fallen through and we didn't do our job properly, then again, maybe it would be slightly less angry. But yeah, I think it all boils down to the fact that Wednesday fans can see they need help. They've heard Danny say they need help. And when that help's not coming, the closer it gets to deadline day, people are starting to stress, starting to be concerned that those incomings aren't going to happen. And like I say, because Danny made it so clear that he did want numerous new additions. It's precarious, I think is probably the right word, where Wednesday fans are at the moment. It's a tough position to be in. But that being said, it's not been a particularly busy January. You know, I out of interest yesterday, we get stuck into being so Wednesday-centric, we don't always look at what's going on elsewhere. But I went and had a look at every team and what they'd signed. There's a lot of teams in the league who've not signed a single player yet. There's very few. I think Huddersfield have signed four, and I think that's the most of anybody in the league. But for the most part, Wednesday are above or about the same as other teams in the division. Obviously, the argument is that Wednesday need it more than most teams in the division. But yeah, so it's been a tough January, I think. Stuff around FFP, not saying that's the thing with Wednesday, but stuff around FFP, the general economic situation. It's not been a gung-ho January, has it?
No. Can we not mention the word? Is it a word? FFP? Like that?
It is nowadays, yeah.
Just throwing that into a Sheffield Wednesday podcast is disgusting.
Yeah, sorry. That's why I had to clarify afterwards that's not Wednesday related. I mean, that's for the window in general. It's been a quiet January, and I think that is part of it.
It panicked me, and I'm reporting on the club. I know that there isn't necessarily an immediate issue. Yeah, it does. I mean, like you say, the stories that we've had on the collapse deals is probably giving this window a different complexion for everyone involved. But also the Danny's been very, very candid, hasn't he, in his press engagements, in terms of his mood, and people have picked up on that. People maybe have run with it in certain places on social media as well. But yeah, it's like anything, you know, transfer windows could they turn on a moment if you can get one deal done. And sat here now, you know, I'd love to have a list of names between us that we could reel off that they're interested in. But Wednesday do operate in the shadows, as I think you put it on social media earlier this week. And look, if we're sat here now on February the 2nd and Wednesday have signed no players, I would be surprised. If they'd signed five players, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised. You know, it really does feel like anything could pop off. So we'll see. Keep it locked to the star.co.uk for the latest. Nice little plug time. So yeah, transfers sort of touched on there. We may well come back to it later in the pod. The sort of the news line from it was that Cameron Dawson is injured and will sit out of this week's FA Cup tie against Coventry. He was going to step in the absence of James Beadle, who is cup tied after his time at Oxford. So Pierce Charles is going to step in. And Joe, look, we've all made the point that this isn't the most exciting cup tie. It's 6 days since the exact same fixture. Seeing Pierce Charles getting a go in a proper game is something that has piqued my interest.
Yeah, same. I think it makes it that little bit more exciting. Gives it a bit of something different. Danny said that Sam Reid could potentially be involved as well, which is a player that Wednesday fans haven't seen much of. Obviously, Guy Sakira has been part of the squad recently. You've got Bailey who might come back into the fold. You know, if we're going to an FA Cup game and all of a sudden you've got, you know, three, four, five academy kids in there, it's something that's a bit different. And I think with Pierce is a really interesting one, because it's not like other positions, is it, where you can throw him in for 10, 15 minutes and you can have a look at him. He's almost become this, like, not to heap too much pressure on you here, Pierce, he's become like this mythical figure in the background, you know, like he came from Man City and lots of people like Pierce. He's a youth international. You speak to the players about him and they've all got very, very good things to say about him. But most people have only ever seen him play at under 18s level, and a few have seen him at under 21s level. So there's a real desire, I think, to see what he's about. And especially because of the way that he plays, he's a footballer. You know, he's a playing goalkeeper. We've heard reports in from the sort of camp, from training, that they still, you know, stick him in midfield sometimes if the shorter of a man, because he's that good. So yeah, I think it just adds an extra element to it. And he's 18. You know, he's 18 for an FA Cup, making his debut in the FA Cup. But what's not to love?
The romance of the cup, eh?
Exactly.
Yeah, it is fun, isn't it? Because it, you know, with these young players, like you say, someone like Bailey, there's been talk about him for a couple of seasons now.
Yeah.
And then he does get his chance. You know, he came off the bench in a cup game, and then he's in the first team. And it is a different world for goalkeepers. And you know, I remember it was, bloody hell, what would it be now? 2.5 years since I was in Portugal. And Pierce was a part of that camp, working with David Stockdale, and he looked fantastic then, you know. And it's good, you know. Obviously not for Cameron, who's you know, no doubt keen to battle James Beadle for the goalkeeper's jersey, but certainly a good opportunity for Pierce to show what he can do. On selection, you mentioned their young players. I think Danny sort of hinted that they might be first and foremost sort of featuring from the bench, but opportunities could be there, as we saw in the last round. Yeah. He sort of suggested that he was going to name a strong team, pretty close to the strongest that he could possibly name.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't seem to give anything, sort of any inclination that he was going to make wholesale changes. I think he will make the smart changes. You know, last game we saw Barry Bannan was rested. You know, wouldn't be at all surprised to see that happen again. But there's also that there is a tipping point in the FA Cup, isn't there? And not to say that money's everything, but like the prize money starts to ramp up quite significantly when you get into these latter knockout stages. So, yeah, I don't think he'll be throwing it in at all. I think we could see quite a young bench, but I think in terms of the actual starting 11, I would imagine that we're going to see. Yeah, go pretty strong, and it's what you want in it. You know, I know that there's obviously things to be said about preserving players and when's you're in a relegation scrap and all that kind of thing. But I think the FA Cup deserves respect. It's obviously an argument that's been had, a conversation that's been had many times over the years, especially recently. But yeah, I think the FA Cup deserves to be taken seriously. And I've always thought with cup runs that it's as detrimental as it can be to fitness level sometimes, and you have too many games. I think that a cup run's good for morale.
What about you, FA Cup? What are your favourite memories as a fan, maybe as a journalist as well?
Do you know what? Newcastle peaked it all, I think. It's a bit sad looking back at. I actually was looking back in to see if there was any I'd sort of missed. And I went back to my sort of formative years, like, you know, 97, 98, 98, 99. There was a year we got to the quarterfinal, but I don't think we ever played anyone actually good. Like, I don't think we beat anyone standout on the way in. I just remember we had some horrible FA Cup runs in the past. I remember getting knocked out by Gillingham and things like that. My first thought was Newcastle is my favourite FA Cup experience. And I thought, well, there must be something better that I had as a kid that was better than that. And I went and checked to see if there's something I'd missed, and I don't think there is. I think it was just generally bad in the FA Cup.
There was something about that night, though, wasn't there? There was the whole...
Yeah, 100%.
You know, when you talk about the magic of the FA Cup, and obviously the kickoff time was different, under the lights. BBC did their sort of the montage, which was quite special. Friend of the show, James Gregg, shout out to you for that one. And the whole Smudge meeting Alan Shearer beforehand, yeah. And it felt like a proper old school build up to a proper FA Cup tie. Two, you know, really big clubs in different worlds of their, you know, their journey, and yeah, a great night, and one that I'll certainly remember for a long time. And you know what? Wednesday deserve to win that. I know that Newcastle are the better.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think it wasn't a scrappy, sneaky, narrow victory, was it? It was a narrow victory, but it was a deserved one. Wednesday were Wednesday were very good throughout the entire game. Started strong, finished strong. Obviously, in different halves of the pitch mainly, but but yeah, and I just think with that night as well, it's made better by what happened afterwards. You know, it was good as it was, but I don't think Peterborough second leg happens without that game. I don't think Wembley happens without that game. I think that set a tone for Wednesday about where they could be. But yeah, it's definitely better than many of the FA Cup games that I've been to in the past. The third round is always on my birthday weekend. Like the Newcastle game was on my birthday. So it was always something I look forward to, and it regularly let me down.
Well, none of it can beat Bradford City beating Chelsea in 2015, I'm afraid.
No, I mean, to be fair, that's a belter. Those are the results that we have the FA Cup for, though, innit? Like, yeah. You know, they probably are a little bit few and further between now. And unfortunately, I think what a lot of the time does happen now is when it does happen, it's often against a weakened side. So not that it takes the shine off it completely, but it's not the same as, you know, a third division side going on and knocking out like a full strength Man United or Chelsea or Liverpool or something like that. But it does still mean a hell of a lot to the underdogs all the way through.
There's a point to be made that this isn't the second round, this isn't the third round. When you get into the fifth round, there's a lot of big clubs in there. And if Wednesday can do their bit and get past Coventry, you know, you've got the prospect of another night.
Spurs away.
Spurs away for the press food. Oof. Hold me back. Yeah, Cuthbert, what are we expecting to see from Coventry? There's obviously, I think Mark Robbins has spoken today about the prospect of Casey Palmer playing. We'll touch on the sorry incident and what happened since in a minute, Joe. What do you expect to see from them?
I mean, it's tough to say because I've not really seen much of them recently. but yeah, no. To be honest, I expect a very similar scenario with Coventry. The Casey Palmer thing is, I suppose, interesting, sad but interesting about how they're gonna play that. But I imagine that they'll be taking it seriously as well. There is a club on the up, aren't they? Coventry have had, they're having a great run of form at the moment. Mark Robbins has got his, he'll have his own FA Cup memories over the years. So yeah, I think that it's a game that both teams will be taking seriously. Danny sort of mentioned in his press conference, it was 2-0, then 2-1. So maybe we're getting a 2-2 with this one.
There's been an arrest made, obviously, you know, when we were touching on Casey Palmer there, reports and subsequent footage of some racially aggravated abuse at the back end of the game last weekend. The response, Joe, it's been heartening in some ways, and it's certainly left me a little bit troubled in others. What's your general take on it all?
Yeah, same. And it's the same as what we've often said when we speak about social media, like that. The vast bulk of response has been, this is horrendous, we need to get this out, we need to get it sorted. But it's the, as you wrote in your very good column yesterday, it's the yeah buts in there, that even though there's so few of them in comparison, they're still there. And I think that is the, we were talking about it on the night even, weren't we? Like and at that point it was, I don't think the footage had been seen, so it was still alleged at that time. But obviously, it became clear quite quickly that it was, you know, it was on camera. It was very obvious what had happened, and there was still a lot of people sort of saying, "Yes, it's bad," but that is, yeah, it is concerning because there's no place for it. There's no justifying it, and we spoke about it before with the players at Wednesday. They will know that it's a minority, but they also know that it's their fans. It's some of their fans, and that can't be easy to handle.
No, I think my... Look, whenever something like this rears its head, there's always a faction on social media. What really troubled me was the weight of yeah buts. It felt like there was a lot of I don't think it was necessarily justifying it or an attempt to justify it. It was just the way that it sat in people's heads and how people had processed it, and it just sort of raised a lot of questions. And like you say, look, they were certainly outnumbered. But listening to phone-ins as well on Football Heaven and that sort of thing this week, raised a lot of questions that I think people need to have a bit of a think about, and uncomfortable conversations need to be had.
Yeah, I do think it was good how it was handled from a Wednesday perspective. They were very, very quick to get something out after the game. Obviously got the chairman voicing his thoughts on it as well. They got it to the police very quickly. And as you say, today, what is it, less than a week later, an arrest has been made and it'll move from there. They obviously identified the person quite quickly, I think, given the footage and the cameras available nowadays. And that's a good thing. The speed at which it was handled, I think, is the only positive to come out of the entire sorry situation.
Joe, we're going to wrap up in a few minutes. I just wanted to touch on, obviously, by the time we next speak on this podcast, the transfer window will be closed and you and I will be, mentally at least, on a beach in sunny Bahamas, having got through the rain of the last, well, I'd like to say it's a month, but it's not, is it? There's a big old build-up to it that you've got to lay some groundwork down on. But what do Wednesday need? But not obviously, you know, if we sat here, we're both going midfielder, winger, two strikers, centre half, left back, all that. But what's the bare minimum that Wednesday can come away with, and you think they can survive in this division?
I think a goal scorer is the thing that every single football club in the world is looking for. But Wednesday don't score enough goals. And that is going to be massive. Obviously, Bailey's come in and done great, but you can't be laying all your hopes of survival on the shoulders of an 18-year-old. It's not going to work. As we've seen, you know, he's going to get tired. The stresses of Championship football are going to be difficult. He's not going to be able to be at his best every single week. So, yeah, well, obviously, Ugbo's come in, and who is, I suppose, predominantly a striker, but he's not a goal getter, so to speak. You know, he's not been sort of prolific in terms of his goals. I think we were both impressed with him when he came on the other day, the way he sort of helped set up Josh Winness's goal as well. But yeah, it feels like Wednesday need a real goal getter, someone who's going to be able to, you know, get 7, 8, 9 goals between now and the end of the season, that's going to be able to help keep him up. If anyone knows where Kenwyn Jones is, then please go find him. But yeah, they need that. Even if it is a loan, Wednesday need a couple through the door who are going to be able to help create and score goals. And then defensively, it's an interesting one because Wednesday have got a lot of centre-backs at the club at the minute that are, you know, capable. I think left-back might be an interesting one because he doesn't seem to have... much... plans to use Reece James at this point in time. Obviously, Marvin Johnson's been great recently, but if something was to happen to Marvin, then you've got Akin, who I think has been pretty solid at left back, but he's, you know, it's not his natural position. So, yeah, left back and up front could be two, but I would quite like to see him find the, again, it's a position that everyone's looking for. You know, like a pacey winger, someone who can come in, who can maybe do it a little bit more consistently than what we've seen from JD and Anthony Musaba. Someone with a bit more English experience, I suppose, playing in either the Premier League or the EFL. So, yeah, I think that would be the thing for me, is Wednesday have done a lot of good work in a lot of good positions since Danny came in. But they still don't score enough. And obviously, if you don't score goals, you don't win games. And if you don't win games, you don't stay up.
There we have it. It all lies on a striker, Joe Cran. There's your headline. Thanks very much for joining us on Everywhere and Nowhere, a Sheffield Wednesday podcast brought to you by the Sheffield Star. Chris will be back next week, all being well, and we'll be dissecting not only the transfer window. I think we've got a busy few days ahead, Joe, but looking back at the FA Cup fallout and looking ahead to whatever comes. Keep it locked, as ever, to thestar.co.uk.